It's a Monday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. I'll have a look at national and regional agricultural news coming up in a show. Taylor Charleston will have a report previewing the upcoming North Valley Nut Conference as well. Regional agricultural news starts things off right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
In regional agricultural news, Sysco Corporation, the leading global food service distribution company, and Daimler Truck North America, the leading North American heavy-duty truck manufacturer, have jointly announced a letter of intent to deploy up to nearly 800 battery electric Freightliner eCascadia Class 8 tractors serving Sysco customers by the year 2026. The first eCascadia delivery is expected to arrive at Sysco's Riverside, California site later this year. Sysco says it is committed to making meaningful investments to support achievement of their goals, including those that encourage the development of electric tractors and trailers. They are eager to partner with like-minded industry leader like Daimler Truck North America to deploy battery electric trucks nationwide, according to Marie Robinson, Sysco's EVP, Chief Supply Chain Officer. She says the investment shows their commitment to sustainability and growing responsibly and will ultimately help them to meet their goal of reducing direct carbon emissions by 27.5% by 2030. Sysco aims to power more of its tractor fleet with alternative fuels and a deployment of Freightliner eCascadias along with refrigerated trailers that will play a significant role in achieving its science-based climate goal to electrify 35% of its U.S. fleet by 2030. Sysco Riverside continues to build its charging infrastructure to support additional battery electric truck deployments, including additional solar capacity. DTA engineers, manufactures, and sells zero-emission trucks that provide efficient, reliable, and innovative transportation solutions for fleet companies while benefiting the environment. The company recently unveiled its all-electric Freightliner eCascadia at the ACT Expo in Long Beach, California. The industry-leading Detroit Assurance suite of safety systems comes standard with the eCascadia to benefit fleets, drivers, and fellow motorists with enhanced on-road safety. Hazel Technologies Incorporated announces open registration for its second annual Apple Quality Summit this week. The one-hour event will be held on Thursday, May 26th, and feature presentations focused on preparing the U.S. Apple industry for the 2022 season. The Apple Quality Summit is a free event and will offer both English and Spanish translations. Registration is open to the general industry until May 26th or until capacity is reached. For more information, log on to hazeltechnologies.com. International Fresh Produce Association will celebrate nine of the country's leading chefs and food service professionals during IFPA's Food Service Conference July 28th and 29th in Monterey, California, as part of the Produce Excellence in Food Service Awards program. The program honors chefs and food service operations for their produce innovation, creativity, and all-around excellence in the use of fresh produce in the culinary arts. There was one winner from California, and that is Christina Bitondo. She is the Associate Director of Culinary Excellence at R&DE Stanford Dining in Stanford, California. The initial subjective forecast for the 2022 California almond production is 2.80 pounds. Forecasted production is 4% below last year's production of 2.92 billion pounds. Forecasted bearing acreage for 2022 is a record high of 1,370,000. Forecasted yield is 2,040 pounds per acre, 8% lower than the 2021 yield of 2,210 pounds per acre. The subjective production forecast is based on a survey conducted from April 19th to May 6th from a sample of 500 almond growers. Respondents had the option of reporting their data by mail, online, or phone. And similar to last year, the 2022 almond crop experienced a mostly dry winter throughout the state. Although there were a few scattered storms, snowpack and water levels continued to be well below normal. The almond bloom began in early February with favorable weather for pollination. High temperatures encouraged a shorter bloom period than has occurred in recent years. The north region with an earlier bloom than the central and south regions was hit the hardest by a freeze that occurred during the last week in February. Frost damage was observed, with reports that some acres would be left unharvested without an adequate nut set. In addition to variability in expected yields across regions, the impact of the freeze appears to differ by variety, as late blooming varieties were reported to have fared better than early blooming varieties. Excellent weather in April helped the crop develop, with a few instances of spring rain bringing some relief to areas impacted by drought conditions. The lack of water continues to be a top concern for almond growers. Electrify America has announced it has entered into a 15-year virtual power purchase agreement with developer TerraGen to build a solar photovoltaic renewable energy generation project in San Bernardino, California. It's called the Electrify America Solar Grow 1. The new solar project is expected to generate 75 megawatts at peak solar capacity, or an estimated annual production of 225,000 megawatt hours. It is projected to produce enough 100% renewable energy annually to more than offset the energy currently delivered on an annualized basis to Electrify America's customers charging on its extensive network. The project is targeted to be operational by mid-2023. In becoming the largest open network in North America to enter into a VPPA, Electrify America will be supporting a key sustainability goal. Additionally, meaning this arrangement would result in new additional renewable energy generation. Electrify America is purchasing and retiring all bundled environmental certificates associated with the new solar project over a 15-year period, shifting away from the business-as-usual approach of buying environmental certificates from a third-party supplier, which does less to support additional renewable energy generation. Total California raisin grape acreage to be harvested by mechanical means was 41,502, 31% of the state's total raisin-type grape acreage, according to the Pacific Region Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. The overhead trellis system was used on 12,644 acres in 2021, accounting for 9% of the total raisin-type grape acreage. Fresno and Madera County growers have 48% and 43% of the overhead trellis acreage in the state, respectively. Kern and Tulare County growers have 6% and 2% of the overhead trellis acreage, respectively. Other mechanical harvest systems include a continuous tray at 20% of the raisin acreage, Southside trellis with 0.5%, and open gable with 1.3% of the raisin type grape acreage. Although Fresno County has the most acreage mechanically harvested at 30,056, that acreage only represents 32% of the Fresno County raisin grape acreage. Madera County growers harvested 44% of their raisin type grape acreage by mechanical means. By variety, Thompson seedless grape acreage harvested mechanically is 28,582, or 26% of the total Thompson seedless grape acreage. 48% of the Fiesta grape acreage is harvested mechanically, and 64% of the Selma peat acreage is harvested mechanically. Most California grape varieties intended for raisins are harvested by hand and placed on paper trays between vine rows for sun drying. The overhead trellis system, however, has led to increased production of dried on-the-vine raisins, which are machine harvested.
Unsure of your navel orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard and hull split from navel orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
The North Valley Nut Conference takes place at the Glen County Fairgrounds in Orland, California on June 8, 2022 in cooperation with the University of California Cooperative Extension. It's a must-attend event for any tree nut grower in the state, pecans, walnuts, pistachios, and almond growers, and will offer a multitude of continuing education credits in the form of CDFA INMP credits, DPR credits, and CCA credits. Luke Milliron, farm advisor and one of the main organizers on the Cooperative Extension side of the show, came on to the Daily News Report to discuss what attendees can expect at the show.
This is going to be a great meeting for folks. We're going to be hitting on, you know, key relevant topics, an opportunity to get DBR hours, CDFA and CCA hours, you know, and just, again, hitting on some key topics with, you know, I'll be talking about rootstock and variety selection. That's a really hot topic, with some folks being unhappy with some certain combinations of rootstock and variety with almond production. We'll also be talking about drought and irrigation management with Ken Shackle. You couldn't get a more pertinent topic as we're going to be in the midst of drought here. So, and then of course, always, you know, on the topic of diseases, you know, with Jim Adiskavich from UC Riverside talking about, you know, various foliar diseases of almonds, as well as Thamus Michaelides, touching both on his work with bot canker in walnuts, as well as band canker in almonds. And then wrapping the show off with Dr. Kat Jarvis-Sheen, my farm advisor colleague in the Southern Sac Valley. She'll be talking about pistachios, kind of a big overview of pistachio in the Sac Valley and some special considerations. Again, something that's on growers' minds as pistachios kind of creep north here. So I'm hoping that there's you know, something for everybody, and that they'll come on out.
Tree nut growers, PCAs, and CCAs in attendance will hear from the best of the best expertise in the tree nut industry at the North Valley Nut Conference, and will get the opportunity to learn about current best management practices within the tree nut industry in order to stay on top.
What to plant, you know, how to irrigate, you know, leading up to harvest and after harvest, you know, all of these key considerations, you know, it's tough. You know, we typically just have these meetings in the dead of winter, and now, you know, we have it, you know, in the middle of the production season. And that poses some difficulties for folks coming out, but it's also a great opportunity. You know, otherwise you kind of have to wait to hear this stuff, and it's all, you know, a fire hose of information every winter. And so you have the chance to find out what's the latest, and actually put those things into practice right away.
While the conference is only a half-day conference lasting from 7 a.m. to 12 p.m., Milliron does believe that it is hitting all the marks for the most important issues affecting the tree nut industry currently.
Of course, I would love, you know, us to be able to touch on things like navel orangeworm, but, you know, we couldn't get to everything. But I think that there's still something for everyone in this agenda, and I'm really looking forward to having these really, you know, engaged and bright cutting edge researchers engaging with our growers in the North Sac Valley. I'm super excited for it.
Prospective attendees can register for the North Valley Nut Conference by going to wcngg.com/North Valley Nut Conference. Or by Googling North Valley Nut Conference 2022. For My Ag Life, this is Taylor Charlstrom.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In national agricultural news, Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow and Ranking Member John Bozeman led a bipartisan group of senators who introduced legislation to address baby formula shortages. The bill is aimed at helping families who rely on the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, otherwise known as WIC. The Access to Baby Formula Act has a companion bill in the House. It would give USDA more flexibility during a crisis like the shortages currently facing the country. The flexibility would ensure that the brand or type of formula families can buy is not restricted by program rules, allowing families to purchase whatever is available in a store. Formula manufacturers would be required to have a plan in place to respond to shortages. It's an extremely stressful time for parents who are looking high and low for baby formula. According to Stabenow, almost half of all babies born in the U.S. rely on the WIC program. The United Nations is talking with Russia about the possibility of opening up Ukraine's Black Sea ports for grain shipments to get exported. Ukraine is one of the largest grain producers in the world and usually exports goods through its seaports. However, Russia controls the Black Sea ports, which has forced Ukraine to export by train or through its smaller ports along the Danube River. Reuters News says that Russia responded to the UN appeal by saying that sanctions on Russia would have to get reviewed if it were to allow the ports to reopen. UN Food Chief David Beasley appealed directly to Russian President Vladimir Putin, saying, "If you have any heart at all, please open these ports." Russia's deputy foreign minister says the sanctions imposed on Russia by the U.S. and EU are interfering with normal free trade, including food products and fertilizers. USA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack recently offered examples of how actions by some nations regarding commodity markets may impact food security in some parts of the world. USA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
The communique from the recent G7 ministers meeting in part focused on threats to food security in parts of the globe. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says in addition to current food security issues with Ukraine,
the communique also expressed concern about recent export bans that have been put in place. Most recently, a deep concern about the one that India recently announced in terms of wheat. India is basically restraining or constraining the ability to access their wheat.
There was also discussion on speculation taking place regarding commodities,
which is why it's necessary for us to continue to look for transparency, continue to look for the collection of data and information that will enable us to have a true market picture. For that reason, the G7 nations, including the United States, indicated a willingness to increase commitments or to provide commitments of financial resources to the Agriculture Marketing Information System operated out of FAO. This is going to cover not only crop markets, but also fertilizer markets as well.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol is designed to bring quantifiable and verifiable goals and measurements to the key sustainability metrics of U.S. cotton production. The good news is more growers took part during the 2021 to 2022 crop year than did during the program's pilot. The initiative's new vision is to set a new standard in sustainable cotton production, where full transparency is a reality and continuous improvement in reducing the environmental footprint is the central goal. During their second year, they doubled the number of U.S. cotton growers in the program, with an estimated 1.1 million cotton acres enrolled, according to Dr. Gary Adams, president of the Cotton Trust Protocol. Virtually all of the top 100 global brands created lists of sustainable raw materials and publicly stated their sourcing will come from these lists over the next 5 to 10 years. The Trust Protocol was designed to meet and exceed the rigorous criteria for the lists. The Environmental Protection Agency referenced potential label changes coming to over-the-top dicamba herbicides for the 2023 growing season in a court document filed by the agency on May 16th. According to the agency, Bayer submitted a proposed amendment to the 2020 registration of its extended max herbicide to EPA on March 18th. It involves additional use restrictions for counties where certain federally listed threatened or endangered species are present. Bayer supported its request with several studies conducted during the 2021 growing season and with other analysis. EPA said the document, which was filed in a U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona, where EPA is currently facing a lawsuit over its 2020 dicamba registrations. In an emailed statement to DTN, Bayer stated that their proposed amendments are meant to address the EPA's stated concerns about protecting endangered species in certain counties in the U.S. They are examining all actions they can to ensure this important tool remains available to their customers. EPA has 9 months from the date of Bayer's submission to consider these label restrictions, which would mean a decision should be made by December of 2022. Recent incidents with elevators being hacked and companies having data held hostage calls for heightened cybersecurity as meticulous hackers request ransoms against agricultural companies. Dan Hansen with SVP Management Liability explains how cyber attacks are a targeted avenue of opportunity.
They're going to go to where you have the easiest access to a lot of information. And ag at times, you know, like with the advent of Internet of Things and maybe some less investment in cybersecurity, it maybe is a little bit easier target in some spaces. It's a critical infrastructure. Obviously, when you can impact the food chain, that gets people's attention very quickly.
Hansen says producers can protect themselves by gaining awareness and understanding.
Be a little bit better at cyber protections than others, and you lessen your chance for an event. So I'd say awareness, having a plan if something does happen to your organization, and then multi-factor authentication would be three things that a producer could focus in on and probably help themselves quite a bit.
He advises to be aware and plan a response should you become a victim of cyber attack.
You know, do we have counsel lined up? Do we have a forensic investigator that we have we're aware of that we can talk to and can come in and see what happened to us over what time period and, you know, who was actually impacted? Those are two very important steps. Have a plan, a simple plan. This is what we're going to do if we have an event, and then practice it a few times.
Hansen says to have that plan in place, just like any other emergency plan for your operation.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Wildfires throughout the western United States are becoming more common and more serious as seasons are getting hotter and drier. Since 2018, a record of 10 million acres have been burned throughout California. Crops are increasingly exposed to smoke and for longer periods of time, and the smoke exposure can result in quality changes in some agricultural products.
Climate change is changing our summers here and our falls dramatically in California, especially with wildfires that have been taking place. And we have a lot of agricultural space that is in areas where these wildfires are becoming increasingly more common. And the problem with the wildfires, other than destroying, property and trees and everything else like that, is the smoke from the wildfires. And I think we've all experienced, unending days of smoke, and it's got high particulate matter in it. And if you have any respiratory issues, you know, it becomes difficult to breathe. But all of that material in the smoke is also being deposited on our agricultural crops, all of our crops, grapes and broccoli and artichokes and whatever is out there in the field growing, including tree nuts.
That was Allison Mitchell, a food chemist in the Department of Food Science and Technology at UC Davis. Mitchell conducted research looking at the composition of volatile organic compounds in almond hulls and kernels exposed to smoke to see if there was going to be a quality issue. These volatile organic compounds that are present in smoke is what can cause smoke taint on some of these ag products, including almonds. Almond kernels are around 50% lipid content, which could make them a target for concentration of these compounds.
Some of these compounds can have sensory quality or promote sensory quality changes in products. We're probably most familiar with this with smoke taint in grapes. The smoke gets on the surface of the grapes, and then many of the volatile organic compounds in the smoke end up getting extracted into the wines. That's one issue. Another issue is many of the compounds in the smoke, like polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, are carcinogens. So you've kind of got two different things going on. It can impact the quality from a sensory point of view, and then it can also impact quality from a safety point of view, and I'm talking about the quality of agricultural crops. So we were interested in this. We've got a lot of colleagues studying this on grapes, and I do a lot of research on almonds. I've been working on almonds for almost 20 years now, and I started wondering myself, well, we've got almonds growing all over the state of California, and the orchards are frequently near a lot of this wildfire smoke. So I wondered if any of that wildfire smoke would get deposited into the almonds and make it, you know, into the almond kernel. And I think that our hypothesis was that almonds are kind of resilient when it comes to wildfire smoke because they are naturally protected by the hull, and that many of these compounds that are in wildfire smoke will be absorbed by the hull. And of course, we don't typically eat the hulls, although the hulls may be eaten by cattle and other livestock animals. So anyway, so we worked with the Almond Board. We just did a preliminary study and we asked the Almond Board to help us source almonds that had been, you know, stockpiled in places. So these were not almonds that came off of a tree. These were almonds that came out of stockpiles, and the stockpiles were located in various areas near the wildfire smoke.
In her research, Mitchell and a team measured the volatile organic compounds related to smoke taint in three varieties of almond kernels, shells, and hulls exposed to wildfire smoke. Their hypothesis was that the almond hull and or shell would naturally absorb volatiles related to smoke taint and protect almond nut meat, and according to their research, they were correct. Mitchell advised, however, that although positive, the results should be considered preliminary, as the sample size was small, the effect of smoke timing and almond maturation, exposure duration, and proximity of the orchard to wildfires were not investigated.
What we did was we went to one of the almond huller shellers that were local, and we sampled out of their stockpiles in three different places of the stockpile, 1 pound of, we looked at Nonpareil, which is a soft shell almond. We looked at Monterey, which is a semi-hard shell almond. And then we also looked at Butte, which is a hard shell almond. And because the hardness of the shell is related to the lignin content, and lignin is a material that has the potential to bind these some of these smoke taint compounds. So we wanted to see if almond shell hardness had an effect. And so what we did was we went out and we just collected 1 pound out of the stockpiles. Why I say this is preliminary is that we had no control over the amount of smoke exposure that occurred in the stockpile and on the trees. And we also didn't know the distance of the individual samples from the smoke. So, you know, the trees are all harvested, put into a truck, the truck's brought into the processor, they're all dumped in stockpiles and they're all mixed, you know, together. So we had no control over that. This was truly a preliminary study where we just wanted to see, are we seeing an increase of smoke taint compounds in the hull, in the shell, and in the kernel of these almonds? So to do this correctly, we would need to have trees identified in an orchard. We'd need to understand the days of smoke that they were exposed to the fire. We'd need to know the distance from the source of the fire, because obviously deposition is of materials is going to lessen the further away from the fire that you are. So there was just no control over any of that. That really requires a larger amount of funding and a multi-year study in years where we are having fires. And, you know, so it's got to be kind of like a reactionary thing to the fire itself. It's kind of hard to plan for.
Mitchell said to expect to see more research into the effects of smoke on not only almonds, but other ag crops in the state as California continues to experience more wildfires. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.